Okay, and welcome back. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're along tonight. Benjamin Fulford joins us this hour, and we're going to be speaking with Ben once a month to get his views on the world economy, the Asian economy, and all points in between. He is in Japan. He is a man of great renown in terms of controversy on the net. He recently secured, by some strange happenstance or other, we're going to find out more, a one-on-one video interview with David Rockefeller, which shook up a lot of people in terms of being surprised. The interview itself is available via video, and we're going to be adding that to the guests section at my website here shortly under Ben's name. You can click on that. It's a $3 download for it. It's extremely rare, to put it mildly. And there's a commentary as well we're going to put up with that in just a few minutes. Ben, welcome back to the program.
Well, it's great to be back.
All right. Tell us, first of all, in your own words, how the response was to the posting on this website of the three letters that apparently somehow made their way to you through the spirit of your great grandfather, George Taylor Fulford, GT for short, who was John D. Rockefeller's buddy, pal. They were cronies of sorts. And this is a very strange story, which did, it made a lot of noise. And people want to know, what's the deal, Ben? You were 8 years Asia-Pacific bureau chief for Forbes magazine. You're a highly respected journalist. You've written a number of books published primarily in Japanese. You're very well known, and this issue of a spirit coming through you is certainly not unprecedented. Many U.S. presidents, for example, dealt with the spirit world to one degree or another, or the occult. So why not Ben Fulford? What was the response, Ben?
Well, I mean, mostly, I think, and, you know, it's a justified response. They think I've gone flaky. And to be honest, that's what I would have thought if it had been someone else. I guess it's one of those you had to be there type of things. It was just so vivid, and I wasn't on any drug or anything. It was just so extraordinary that I felt compelled.
There were three letters. Give us your, I want to hear about each. Did they all come down the pike at the same time? Were they different or what?
No, it was different. It always come just around dawn, in a sort of half-sleep, half-awake state, and then just so vivid and so overwhelming that, you know, I felt the need to write this. I mean, now, what happened? I mean, and I started doing some research because I remember there was a lot of talk about seances at Fulford Place, and I looked through Mackenzie King. William Lyon Mackenzie King was the Prime Minister of Canada for 21 years, and that's the longest of any Prime Minister in the Commonwealth and longer than any U.S. President. Mm-hmm. And he's considered to be quite a good Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. And when he died, his diary showed up, and it turned out that he was consulting spirits. And one of the places he regularly did it was at my great-grandfather's house, where apparently he consulted the spirit of my great-grandfather. He believed he did. And what's interesting is that the actual content of what these spirits told him is not published in the diaries. So I'm saying to myself, why would the Canadian government keep secret what a prime minister thought ghosts told him 70 years ago?
So they were redacted from the diaries.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're not there on the online version. I certainly never heard about this, and I didn't know that my great-grandfather's name was mentioned 184 times in his diary. So it was, to say the least, very unusual. And what I experienced was just so different from anything I ever have that I felt, you know, even though I knew that people brought up with, you know, normal, rational thinking wouldn't believe it. And I never believed it. I mean, I remember hearing these stories and thinking what superstitious people my ancestors were.
Well, in the 19th century, contacting spirits, parlor magic, parlor seances were huge, huge. So it wasn't not surprising to me. When did your great-grandfather die again? What year?
1905.
Okay. Well, this was going on in his day and age at its height. Basically.
Sure. Now, the other thing that I found out from Mr. Rockefeller himself was that Mackenzie King was his father's best friend, William Lyon Mackenzie King. So,
oh, really? Now, that's fascinating.
So
GT, your great-grandfather, and John D. Rockefeller, and Mackenzie King and David Rockefeller's father were best friends. Well, Right.
Yeah, you know, it's a sort of weird coincidence or some kind of... I just didn't know about this until I actually met the man. And now I guess people are going to want to know how I met him. Well, I mean, if he thinks he's going to come to my turf, you know, undetected and try to manipulate Japanese politics behind the scene, then he's either naive or arrogant because, you know, I could have had him brought to me, trussed up with a vibrator up his ass if I wanted.
Now,
that's what happened to a journalist from the Yomiuri newspaper, which is why I mentioned that.
That's exactly right. I mean, but we need to flesh the story out, as it were, to make sure people understand it's not without precedent. Okay.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, but in any case, I mean, I was not ever someone to believe in ghosts. And until it happened to me, I would have dismissed it. And I say to those people who haven't experienced it, well, remain skeptical. It's not really that relevant anyway to what's going on. But for Mr. Rockefeller's point of view, it's extremely relevant because he's 92. He's going to be thinking about what's going to happen after he dies.
Right. Well, he's great. John Dee was obsessed with his life after. He didn't want to die because he didn't trust it. Now, all right, hold on a second. David Rockefeller flies to Japan. How did you find, you know, you're a journalist, but let me ask you, how did you find out he was there or going to be there? What was the mechanism? How did you know? He didn't fly in on the United Airlines in tourist class. How did he do it?
Well, what happened is I saw his picture in the paper. And the paper said the interview took place in New York, but I could sense something. And then picture appeared on the internet when he was of him in Tokyo, and it was forwarded to me saying, hey, he's in Tokyo.
Okay.
And then basically, I mean, I've done this before, you know, I could have asked for my secret society people to do some, you know, skullduggery and find out, but you don't really have to. I just picked up the telephone and I called the hotel where such people normally stay. I waited till 10 at night, which is a time when the handlers would have been gone to their own rooms. He would have been finished all his public events. He'd be alone in his room. I just called the front desk.
And they patched you through to his room?
Yeah. Could I speak to David Rockefeller, please? And boom, there he is on the phone. I think I scared him a bit, but, you know, it was no need for any special tricks. The thing is, the internet has become like the world's most incredible
gossip column. I know. But,
yeah, the Secret Service. I mean, yeah, everybody is an eye now. So some guy with a camera phone got him, and boom. And next thing you know, it's in my inbox.
All right. You'd say, hi, Mr. Rockefeller. I'm Benjamin Fulford. You may know the name of my grandfather. What did you tell him? How was the conversation? What happened?
Well, I just phoned him up and I said, this is Benjamin Fulford, and I'd like to interview you. And
did he react to the last name? He knew it?
Yeah, he knew it. There was no doubt about it. And he said, well, call me at 8 in the morning. So I called at 8, and then I met him at 11. And he had a very heavy-duty-looking guy and the head of the chairman of a PR company with him.
Did you meet him in the hotel?
Yeah, and you know what? He stayed in a rather modest suite, just a two-room suite.
Okay.
Not some big fancy place.
All right.
You know, he seemed a bit nervous and scared. So I tried to be very gentle and stay within his matrix. Now, if people see the interview, they'll think, why didn't you ask him, like, hard questions, like, about, you know, killing all those people with AIDS or something? And the reason is, just because all I would have gotten is a straight denial all down the line, and then the heavy guy would have eventually chucked me out, and that would be
that. That's an important point, and you're correct. He would not answer anything he didn't want to answer. Neither Ben Fulford or anyone else is going to catch David Rockefeller off guard and make him answer something that he doesn't want to answer. So that's a valid position. I understand that, and I haven't seen the interview, but you apparently did your best to get some information out of him as far as you felt that situation would allow, correct?
Yeah, I think the best thing I got is the look on his face when I told him about Ron Paul. And he hadn't even heard that Ron Paul was going to take the powers of the Fed back. But the look he had when he looked at his assistant, like, what? Why didn't you tell me about this? Why haven't you dealt with this, you know? It was like, that was the sort of look.
So when you asked him that question, he did look away from you?
Yeah, he looked at, well, assistant? At first, he didn't know, apparently, that this was what Ron Paul was planning.
Mm-hmm.
When he found out, for me, he kind of looked surprised and looked at his assistant now.
Interesting. All right. Stand by. We'll take a break. Right back with Benjamin Fulford, live from Japan, talking about the David Rockefeller interview. We're putting up a link to that right now in our guests section at the top of Rents.com, and you can have a crack at it right away. Okay. I just got the link myself a few minutes ago, so we're going to put it up right away. Live in Tokyo. I'm just looking at your comments just before the interview began, I guess. You're just sitting down?
That's
the video. That's the small talk before the interview began?
Yeah. You know, what's... I got some friends, the people who did the Hoboken on 911 video to put it up on the net, because I don't really have that technical ability. But, you know, they put out one of the good 911 videos, so I let them do it out and put it on the net on their site. But hopefully, you know, it'll be available. I mean, they're asking for some kind of donation, but hopefully it'll be available free, too, over time.
Now, this is the commentary of you and David Rockefeller is not the entire interview with Rockefeller, is it?
It shouldn't be the entire interview. I haven't seen it myself yet.
Okay, so it's one link I got from you. We're doing this on the fly, folks, so forgive me. One link I got shows a $3 download charge, and the second link I got from you is I'm seeing the interview now, and it's free. So, I mean, which are we to...
I think there's a limit on the amount of downloads for the free one, something like 500 or something, which I don't know. I mean, I'm not in charge of that. So,
okay, well, that wasn't the whole interview. I get the picture. You're making comments on it.
I see. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know how they did it. But what I did was when I was interviewing, I was just asking them questions. And what I wanted to do was, you know, answer back. I mean, it's not a debate, right? I mean, but I do want to comment on what his answers, right? So it was me arguing back with him, which I couldn't do at the time.
Okay, I get it. So the commentary is a second piece of video. The primary piece is the interview.
Yeah.
And the commentary is a second piece, right?
What I was hoping was it would be you'd hear the question and his answer and then my comment and then the question, his answer, my comment.
They apparently did it two separate deals. They did the interview in one video clip and then your commentary with, and then they did, have you seen it?
No, they were in a hurry to get it up.
Who did this? Who put this together? What they did was, when you, I'm sorry, wait, I just saw this. When you and David Rockefeller are sitting down in the room, he's 92 years old, obviously very capable. You're sitting down, he's sitting down. Well, they played a little game with the tape and kept reversing it back and forth and put some rock music to it to make it look like you're both doing a sitting up and a sitting down and standing up little kind of shtick to music. And I just want people to know that you didn't produce this, someone else did.
No, I asked a friend who, you know, I gave him the tape, and I said, could you get this on time for the show, right?
Okay, well, they had a little fun with it, so I just want to be clear that it wasn't your doing, and it is, I guess, a little cutesy. But anyway, I'm kind of surprised.
Well, I'll try to get the, I'm sorry, after, by the time your show's up, I'll try to get the whole thing properly up in good form. I guess they were in a hurry.
Oh, I'm going to hold off posting that. I'll put the interview up, which asks for a $3 download request, and those who want to look at it in this particular form can. And then I'll let you have another shot at your commentary to see if you want that little bit in there where it shows a little bit of a dance routine. I don't know how appropriate that is.
I'll talk to those guys after the show. But one thing, anyway, getting back, there were the interview itself, I mean, I asked him, are you the secret ruler of the world? He says, well, anyone thinks that is a crackpot, and, you know, which is the sort of answer you get if you ask that sort of question. But then,
well, exactly. Now, that's exactly correct. I mean, that's what you're going to get. Are you the secret ruler of the world? Well, he is not the secret ruler of the world. And anyone who thinks that is a crackpot. True, it's true. He is not the ruler of the world. He is one of the incredibly powerful movers and shakers of the developed, so-called developed Western world.
Yeah.
He is internationally connected like few humans ever will be or ever have been. And his power is virtually limitless.
Sure, but I did get something good in, after the camera was turned off, but I still had my digital tape recorder on.
Uh-huh.
He was saying that, you know, I've said that there's conspiracy stuff all over the internet, and it's like the 1970s. Oh, like the 70s. And it's quite clear. He's admitting, basically, that was like a failed slave revolt or something, you know. The 1970s was the time when all of us, the hippie movement was basically an anti-Illuminati protest.
Even though it didn't know it at the time.
They didn't know it at the time.
No.
But that's what it, you know, in retrospect, it seems to have been this way.
Well, it was also a Tavistock experiment to a degree, too, apparently, if you can believe that. So.
Yeah, and I met Timothy Leary once, and it turns out he was paid by the CIA to tell people to drop out.
I think the CIA posted funds to a lot of those people back then.
Yeah. Well, we were all manipulated and drugged up by those people. But I think now that the baby boomers or the hippies are establishment, maybe it's time for them to take their revenge, you know. But there's another thing I wanted to talk about, which is people have been asking me about the Chinese or the Asian Secret Society's Autumn Surprise. And I would just like to say it has actually happened, and as they said, it would be unpredictable and worse than expected. Now, if you're a Pentagon military planner, you're facing a situation. Now, if you look at the chessboard, your aircraft carriers have just been removed. They're all sitting ducks. Your satellites have been taken off the board.
Well, the Chinese are preparing to do that. Ben, let me ask you to hold on.
Yep.
Let's do the break, come back, and we'll reset this and take it from the top again. Okay, we're putting up a link to the Benjamin Fulford, David Rockefeller interview, so hit refresh at Rents.com and look in the guests box, and it should be there momentarily. Okay, be right back live to Japan and Benjamin Fulford. Okay, we're back with Benjamin Fulford. Ben, hold your thought. We're going to go to that in just a minute, but I think for all of our listeners out there, I'd like to play just a little snippet of your conversation with David Rockefeller from your comments that we're posting, which are up on YouTube. I'll put a link up to that momentarily. And I'd like people to be able to hear the man's voice. It gives a little more reality to all this. And then we'll get to your comment, which we just began to develop before the break. So hang on just a second. Yeah. Right, here's a little bit of the video you can see for free. It's Benjamin Fulford's comments. You'll see them being posted in our guests section momentarily. But I'm going to play a little bit of David Rockefeller's response to Ben's first question, which you'll hear. The interview lasted how long, approximately, Ben, the whole thing?
Just 15 minutes, and then maybe about 5 minutes with the digital tape recorder.
Still running, okay. All right, very good. All right, here we go.
All right, so let me start, though. I know that I've read quotes from you before, and I believe also from your memoirs, where you have said that you would like to see the formation of a world government. What sort of vision do you have for, humanity to stop war and get its act together? So.
Well, I'm afraid I have to start with what you recall. I don't recall that I have said, and I don't think I really feel, that we need a world government. We need governments of the world that work together and collaborate, but I can't imagine that there would be any likelihood or even that it would be desirable to have a single government elected by the people of the world. So I think whatever you heard was misrepresented my feeling.
Okay.
So the first question.
Okay, and that's just a little snippet from the comments by Ben Fulford about his meeting with David Rockefeller. It seems like a nice fellow. Ben?
Yeah, we actually met him. Look in his eyes. You don't see the snake eyes. He's not the devil. He seemed like a nice old guy, you know.
And for those of you who watch the video and see the little digital pixelation of David Rockefeller's face and his shirt and tie, please don't write and tell me that there's proof that he's truly a reptilian and he's shape-shifting and the digital camera caught the shape-shifting. Please. It's just it's an artifact of the electronics and the computers, okay? That's all. All right. Okay. I get this a lot. Let's go ahead with your comment. We started just before the break.
Oh, well, you see, the thing about the situation Mr. Rockefeller and his people find themselves in is quite fundamentally different from it was 6 months ago. Let's talk about the strategic chessboard that the United States military planners now face.
With their floating coffins, floating graveyards.
Yeah, so their aircraft carriers are out of the picture. They're junk. They're useless militarily. Their satellites, the same thing. They can all be shot down, right?
Blinded by lasers, whatever.
Sure. Yeah, and the Chinese have, since the 1960s, they've been preparing to get their entire population underground in case of a nuclear war.
Even half of it. That's a lot of people, put them underground.
Yeah.
But even half, okay, whatever.
But they can. I mean, everybody in the cities can go underground. And so they are actually prepared to, in the worst-case scenario, fight and win a nuclear war. And the United States, the cities are all sitting ducks. People got nowhere to go.
Well, civil defense died here in the 1960s. There is none.
Yeah. So, militarily, okay, any chance of subduing China militarily has passed. It's no longer going to be possible, and it's only going to get worse, okay? And here's the choice that they're being offered by the Asians, right? Is that if they agree to share, the rulership of the planet with their fellow inhabitants of the planet, the 65% of the world's people who live in Asia and the people who live in other countries, then they can have a permanent end to war, okay, forever. And they could put all those resources to saving the environment, ending poverty, and the American military, they can become the world's policemen, the world's park rangers, the world's emergency rescue crew, and they can go and explore the universe. So, basically, they can choose unilateral self-destruction or to become heroes of the planet. I think it's a good offer. You know, there's no reason to have any more war. There's no enemies out there for you. You don't have to manufacture enemies out of nowhere. And the other thing I'd like to say to the Sabbateans, these people who, you know, think they can, or have been trying to manipulate history and were responsible, I believe, for 100 million deaths in the 20th century, well, look at their situation they're in now. The U.S. generals are onto them, and they don't want to be on the wrong side of a war crimes tribunal. They're not going to let them start a war with Iran. There's not going to be any World War III. I mean, they're lucky to be alive, frankly. And I'm offering them a chance. I mean, this particular sect has been trying to artificially create biblical prophecy, right? So in that letter, I give them a chance. I say, all right, why don't they go ahead and do it? Just change the script slightly. They can have a big apocalypse show, you know, and they've been planning something. I mean, those $3 trillion that disappeared from the military budget, well, they went to something.
Well, that was Rabbi Dov Zakheim, the comptroller of the currency at the Pentagon, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, they've got this, and I say, okay, why don't they give us this big thing as a show, you know, the best show we've ever seen.
And well, probably throw E.T. in there, too, you know.
Sure, yeah. I think they got a fleet of UFOs stashed away somewhere. I don't believe they're made over extraterrestrially, though. But, you know, certainly the Germans had flying saucer technology at the end of the war. Why keep it secret?
Mm-hmm.
The only reason would be if they want to create another UFO show.
Well, they have plenty of toys they could bamboozle a lot of people with.
Yeah, and then they could put on, I know they have hologram projectors, and they have... Great.
That goes back 25 years, called Operation Bluebeam, yeah.
Right, so, you know, they could give us a great show. And then, if they want to build a temple or a ziggurat, well, why not? There's nothing in the Bible that says it has to be in exactly the same place. They could do it somewhere else, you know, maybe in the middle of the South Pole or something, or anywhere. I mean, there's lots of places they get clear property rights and build the most fantastic temple ever. And... if you look at the latest technology, okay, it really is true that immortality in this world is just around the corner. It's a fact. We can live forever on this planet.
It's coming to a Walmart near you, folks, soon. So yeah. Just hang on.
And they'll be able to increase their intelligence with new drugs and with gene therapy.
Now they're already playing with all this stuff behind closed doors, as it were. And
yeah,
you know, you,
why
you
not
think, go ahead.
Give it to the masses. Let everybody be immortal.
Nah,
now
the sheep. The sheep are not deserving. You know that. All right.
Well, you know, the thing is that they're facing a revolt anyway. I mean, their choice is they can either give us all more immortality, and what? I mean, what more can they ask for? Isn't that worthy of being called a new era? Where people have immortality.
Sounds like it to me. All right. More chance for the IRS to collect more money too. All right. Stand by. I'll be right back with Benjamin Fulford in just a couple minutes. Okay, we're back with Benjamin Fulford live in Tokyo. Ben will be with us once each month, in the future we'll be exploring economic issues. He was the Asia-Pacific Bureau Chief for Forbes magazine for 8 years and is now a freelance writer, journalist, author, and probably a bit of a star in Japan. Okay, let's go back to David Rockefeller. Now, some months ago, if memory serves... you wanted to deliver, you said, an ultimatum to David, change or you're out of here. Did you get a chance? Did you do it? Did you tell him anything about the discontent of the sheep, that he is running out of time, that there is a secret society or any other mechanism which might threaten the power elite of which he sits certainly at the top or in a co-chair position?
Yes, I mean, this is, I mean, I did this after I turned off the recorder. You have to understand this, because, but I asked him very politely.
Now, hold on. I know you're a journalist, and you just said something, and I have no reason to doubt you. I just want to be sure that our listeners heard you clearly, so repeat that. You did broach the subject with him after you turned off the recorder.
Yes, because I knew on the record it wouldn't be...
Well, it's not a very politically expedient thing to do, and you're just meeting someone to threaten them. But be that as it may, how did you present such an ultimatum, if that's the right word? How did you present the subject to him, and what was the gist of his reaction?
Well, you know, I think it's always best to ask in a nice way.
I understand.
And what I said was, you know, I think of you as the Wizard of Oz, and I'd like to say to this, please, sir, we all want to go back to Kansas, okay?
Now, this is you and David Rockefeller after you turned off the digital recorder.
Yes.
Following the cessation of the video portion of the interview.
Yes.
All right.
And also, I told him that it appeared to be that my great-grandfather was channeling through me, and we'd already established that there was a connection through Mackenzie King.
You talked to him about this?
Yes.
All right. What did he say about your great-grandfather?
Well, he said, you know, what he said was, you know, oil was already well established when electricity started.
No pun
intended.
No pun intended.
But he said oil was already well established.
That was good.
Yeah. So, you know, he sort of admitted, yes, that they suppressed the electric industry in order to preserve the oil industry.
Did he say electricity like electric cars or just electricity in
just
general?
Just electricity, he said, yeah, GE. Right?
Okay,
so,
all right, but what did he say about this issue of a group of Asians who you know, are ready to take these people out unless they change their ways?
Well,
we need a new direction. Unless they get out of the road and let people go back to Kansas, they're going to be deep-sixed. Or,
yeah, but, you know, again, like the Asians say, they don't like to, you know, this is best left unsaid, right? I mean, it's kind of known.
So did you unsaid it?
Yeah, what I said was we all want to go back to Kansas, which means turn off your matrix, unplug your matrix.
It's a nice metaphor. All right, I understand the metaphor. What did he say? I didn't like the movie, leave me alone?
He had a very friendly smile, and he looked like he was in a happy man. And he seemed relieved, but he didn't answer me directly. And it'll be his actions that'll tell us the answer.
He didn't flip you off or anything?
No.
The silent hand language of diplomacy.
No, I mean, but it was a very, I think he was quite relieved that, you know, I did not threaten him and stuff. And it was an amazingly friendly meeting, you know, considering.
All right, I understand why you wouldn't broach it in those terms, but... You did create the image in his mind that there are a lot of people who aren't particularly happy with the way the world is right now, and they'd like a change.
Well, he told me that he'd been summoned by the emperor, okay? And he made it clear the emperor was probably going to, you know, tell him something. And you can see from events that the Asian countries are dumping his dollar. And they're doing it.
Another story today about China, yeah. Well, they can't dump it completely, or as you've said, and many have said, there's no profit in dumping it completely, but they certainly want to wring it out a little bit.
Yeah, well, they're saying, look, we don't have to pay for you to kill us, you know? And if that's what they've been doing with their treasuries, you know, buying weapons to kill Asians or creating bioweapons, well, who wants to finance that? You know, it's an interesting thing here. Like, the Japanese government also, I mean, they're buying all their oil in yen now.
Mm-hmm.
They're bypassing the dollar. And they're dumping their dollars, too. It's not just a Chinese thing. I guess I should have mentioned this society is an Asian secret society. It covers all of Asia. It's not just China.
I think you made that clear in the past.
Yeah. And so he knows this stuff going on. I mean, he's been told.
I would think. They tell him everything except Ron Paul wants to get rid of the Fed, but he is well informed.
Yeah, I mean, I had a guy from military intelligence call me up and say, you know, they talked to someone senior in the Taiwanese government, and they said to him, you must do what Mr. Benjamin Fulford says. I mean, they're being told by senior Chinese and Japanese and Taiwanese, et cetera, officials that they're tired of war.
And yet they're getting ready to fight the big one.
Well,
is this
going
to be the
war
to end all wars, or are they just going to demobilize at some point and junk all their equipment?
Well, they're going to have to change jobs. I mean, they're going to. I know I could convince them to finance the dollar generously if the Pentagon, you know, went on a huge anti-poverty, anti-environmental destruction campaign.
Ain't going to happen. Not voluntarily. Well, you got too many neocon Zionists there who are. They have a different agenda, and they could care less about Asian secret societies.
All right. Well, neocons are, let's face it, they're neo-Nazis. Let's call them what they are.
Well, we agree.
And their tactical situation is a mess, okay? People know that they're financing al-Qaeda. We know it's a Zionist front. We know they're trying to provoke people to kill each other. We know who they are. We have a list of their names.
When you talk about Zionism, you got to talk about this in the context for our listeners mega bankers and mega cartels.
All right, let me explain. Okay, everybody is a Zionist when it comes to agreeing that now that there's a country called Israel, it should stay there, right? I mean, you know,
well, not everyone.
Well, not everyone, but I mean, the point is that it's these crazy people who want to create a country that rules the world, and it is based between the Euphrates and the Nile rivers, okay? We're talking about extremists, okay? So maybe we shouldn't. These aren't your ordinary garden variety Zionists. These are.
No, they're not.
People
that's who
you want
mentioned
to,
earlier, Sabbateans. That's good.
Yeah. So they're Sabbateans. They believe they're going to enslave everybody and rule the world from Babylon, okay? This is very different from, you know, people who support Israel. This is a different kettle of fish. I mean, I would say 99% of Jews would not support their agenda if they knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So maybe
to do with the Judaic religion. This is a geopolitical issue, and people are sophisticated enough to know that now.
Yeah, it's a form of imperialism and a form of neo-Nazism that uses Judaism as camouflage.
And what newspaper was allowed by the German government to publish throughout most of the Second War? The only opposition newspaper was a Zionist newspaper, so you guys can figure that out, I'm sure.
Yeah, so, you know, this is the thing. Their agenda, they've lost it. It's blown up. They don't control Russia anymore, and they don't control Japan anymore.
They sure lost Russia, and the Rothschilds have been smarting over that ever since. The only consolation they've won recently is the conquest of France with that Sarkozy creep.
Yeah, and they got their flunky in Canada, Harper, but he's on his way out. And I suggest to Canadian citizen journalists and journalists out there listening, follow the oil money to his door, show him to be a traitor to his people, and kick him out, you know? Canada deserves better. Canada was able to keep itself free from this control almost with the exception of Mulroney. They were able to keep themselves independent. And that, I believe, is the work of people like Mackenzie King and Lester Pearson. And the Canadian model is a much better one. Use an international court instead of an army. Talk to people. Respect other cultures. Let's have peace. You know, just common sense. And people in the Pentagon, too, they need to use their common sense. I mean, they need to wake up from their hypnosis and realize that they have no enemies, they don't need to manufacture them, and that the world be happy to finance them to go explore the universe or terraform Mars or do something a little bit more useful than killing people. And I know they'd feel better going home at night to be able to tell their kids they, you know, did good work. And this is important because at the end of the day, to save the Americans, and to prevent the, you know, you're going to have to get the people at the Pentagon to look at their consciousness, realize that, you know, they don't want to be in the wrong end of a war crimes trial. And these Zionists, neocons, they're out. They're finished. Really, strategically, they have no options. They relied on fooling people, but the people aren't fooled anymore. A critical mass knows who they are, knows what they're up to, and so it's game over. And I'm offering them a great alternative. So I hope they take it seriously. You know, I do have an initial list of 200 names. If I have to, I make one email and that's it. I'd rather not. I'm not that kind of person, you know. And the Chinese, the Asians have been using peaceful methods like selling the dollar. And hopefully we can continue that way and prevent war. Because this is all about peace versus war. I mean, if you have world peace, what can you do with $600 billion a year? Think about it, that you're spending on your military, not even including the Iraq war costs and the Afghan war.
It's an obscenity. We lost, in the last century, over 150 million souls to war.
Yeah. Another thing about these people is if they don't listen, I strongly recommend to the military, the Provost General does exist, and he does have the power to arrest the president, is that if they don't listen, confiscate their trust funds and their so-called charitable foundations, and I think you'll find there'll be $100,000 at least for every man, woman, and child in America. And there's a lot of families that could use that kind of money right now.
Wouldn't surprise me.
And it was stolen from them.
Indeed. That's not the least of it. Ben, thanks for the fascinating hour. We'll look forward to talking to you next month. Both the interview and your comments are up there now. And guests, take care.
All right. Thank you.
Good night. Okay, take a look at the homepage, hit reload, and look in guests, and we'll thank you for being here at this point. I'm Jeff Rentz. See you tomorrow night.